We started a series a few weeks ago, and it's called Path to Our Purpose. And really, it's this is such probably two things that are really strong in me. One is for people to know their identity, to know who they are. It's one of the things from the very beginning that the devil has tried to do is try to confuse people about who they are and who God has made them to be. I mean, today in our culture, that's such a huge thing, such a huge confusion in some areas over identity. And I think that Jesus wants to reveal to you who he's made you to be. And then the other thing is purpose. In other words, why am I here? I've said this the last 2 weeks, and it's not mine, but I like it. And that is that somebody said that the two most important days of our lives are the day that we're born and the day we find out why we were born. And so I looked at my own life and I thought, you know, what were the things that led me to finding out what God's plan for my life were? And so the path to our purpose really is kind of based upon that, what God did in my life. And the very first week, 2 weeks ago, we started out with this, becoming a Jesus follower. That when we begin to follow Jesus, we make Jesus Lord of our life, he begins to reveal to us. He'll reveal to me and to you what he's called us to do. You know, in the very beginning of his ministry, whenever he called some of his disciples, he said to them, hey, look, if you'll follow me, I'll make you to be fishers of men. In other words, by following me, you'll discover why you're here, what I've created you for. And so the very first place we begin to discover our purpose is when we begin to follow the one that made us. And then last week, we talked about the things in our life that we give God access to, whether it's, you know, anything that we have control of. It could be our time, or it could be our talents or our treasures or things that just really matter to us, or the gifts that we personally have. And we begin to say, God, use us however you want. He has access to it. He begins to reveal things to us. You know, one of the accounts that we looked at is when Jesus was preaching one time from Peter's boat. And Peter had been fishing all night long and hadn't caught anything. And when Jesus was through preaching from his boat, then he said, Peter, go fishing again. And Peter's like, oh man, we fished all night long, haven't caught anything. But I'll do what you say. And so he did, and he caught this great, huge mess of fish. And it impacted Peter's life so much that, you know, it just really kind of cemented him in following Jesus. But it began with him giving Jesus access to the things that mattered to him. And so as we do that and we begin to say, God, this is yours, do with it as you want, then we begin to, again, to discover our purpose. Well, today I want to talk about serving. Now, I know this, that when you think about serving, it's not one of the most exciting things in the world. I could say, look, we're going to have a marriage conference and people would be coming and there'd be a pretty good crowd. Or we're going to talk about parenting and then people would be coming. If I said, hey, we're going to be talking about serving, people are like, hey, don't we have something to do today? And so I get that and I understand it. But I think part of the reason why we don't get excited about that is because we don't understand the significance of it and the impact it has to realizing who God has made us to be. I know it's one of the areas that he revealed to me that things were done in me, and he taught me things in those moments that were preparation for this. So we're gonna look at that today. First of all, if you would open up your Bibles to Mark chapter 10. If you're still learning your way around the Bible, know this, that there's an Old Testament and a New Testament, and Mark is in the New Testament. So it's Matthew, then Mark. Mark was a follower of Jesus. Many people think that he traveled with Peter after Jesus had been raised from the dead. And as Peter shared the gospel, then Mark wrote down these accounts that Peter gave him. And so in Mark chapter 10, two of the disciples' mom had went to Jesus. Now, I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings, but like if you're grown and your mom's engaged in your business, it's probably not going to work out real good for you. Always. Now, I'm not saying there aren't some exceptions to that. There probably are. So, you know, if that's you, you may be the exception. So don't send me any emails. And especially if you're not going to sign it, don't send me letters or emails if you're not going to sign it. Okay. So I got all the toilet paper I need. Anyway, so I didn't say that in the first service. I wanted to wait till we got it on video. And so, but so she came and she said, you know, hey, I've got one thing to ask from you. Jesus said, what is it? And she said, I'd like for my sons, one to sit at one hand and the other to sit at the other when you come into your kingdom. And he asked me, he said, well, can you drink from the cup that I'm going to drink of? And they said, we will. And he said, well, he said, in reality, he said, that's not for me to say where you sit. He said, that's in the Father's hands. And so the other disciples found out about it and they were like, What? Have you lost your mind? You know, clearly Jesus is going to choose me. So they had this huge argument. So in verse 41, it says this, when the 10 other disciples heard what James and John had asked, they were indignant. So Jesus called them together and said, you know that the rulers in this world lord it over their people, and officials flaunt their authority over those under them. In other words, he said, for people that aren't kingdom-minded, then authority looks like this, that they lord their position over people. In other words, I'm in charge, so you serve me. I have the title. And so in the world, position is about privilege. That whenever we have a title, then it creates privilege or gives us an opportunity for privilege in our world. But Jesus said, he said, that's the way it is. But he said, among you, it will be different. Everybody say it will be different. In other words, leadership among Christians, authority among Christians looks different than non-Christians. You know, so many times, based upon some things that Paul said in Ephesians, a lot of times, you know, husbands will say, well, I'm the head of this household and that kind of thing. And I'm not saying that you're not in the position of leadership, but what I am saying is that often we use that to get our way or to influence or to manipulate a direction we want to go and misunderstand entirely what leadership in the body of Christ means. Leadership in the body of Christ is not about privilege, it's about purpose. And to understand that. And I'll just say this too. If I go to a business and I'm not satisfied with the service and I want to know who's in charge, it's not so that I can get permission from them to do anything. It's because I want to remind them, because they are in charge, they're responsible. And I knew that would excite people. But the truth of the matter is that in the body of Christ, he said it will be different. He said, whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first among you must be the slave of everyone else. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many. So here's what I love about this, is that they were talking about, how do I get to this great position? And Jesus didn't say to them, well, you shouldn't want that. What he did say to them is that the only way in the kingdom that seat gets attained is by how you serve. Now, again, the specific seat they wanted, he said the Father plays a part in that, and that is, was this made for you? But he's revealing here that greatness in the kingdom comes through servanthood. And quite honestly, this is a principle that even non-Christians, when they put it into practice, it benefits them. When you think about the retail world, if you study the history of retail from the early 20th century till now, it's amazing how many times that's changed hands. You think about companies like Sears Roebuck that at one time was thriving, JCPenney's at one time was thriving, and you look at, as time has went on, the different ones have taken their place. You know, the book Good to Great, there's a business that was mentioned that was thriving at that time, and even in that short period of time, that business has suffered some. There was a time that Walmart was just kind of a little five and dime, and one of the Claremore was one of the places that he was putting into practice the things that he thought would make for great business. Well, here we are just several decades later, and it's one of the top, maybe the top retailer in the world, but it was because they served a need that their customers had, and that's why people go there. I certainly don't go there to feel better. I walk in Walmart as Superman and leave as Clark Kent. I mean, it is my kryptonite, but I still go there. And so we go there because there's a need being met. Well, you know, it's this practical need that the key to greatness, Jesus gave it. If you want a great marriage, then you have two people in that marriage that are servants, that it leads to a great marriage. If both people want privilege in their relationship and no purpose, the marriage is going to be a disaster. That the things in our life that we recognize those things is by being willing to serve. And so here's the thing about serving. Number one is that serving leads us to the place we're called. It leads to the place. I've discovered this, and especially true of the older cars, but even now, that you don't steer a stagnant car. You steer a car when it's moving. As a matter of fact, when I was younger, the cars they had then, even if you had the car in park and you were trying to move the steering wheel, it was a lot tougher if the car wasn't moving. I found our lives are the same way. that whenever we begin to make ourselves available and we begin to make ourselves vulnerable and we begin to serve, and we understand this about servants, that servants don't make it about themselves. Again, that in the kingdom, if you're called to lead, it's not so you have all these privileges, so all these people will be at your beck and call. That in the kingdom, if you're called to lead, it's not about how many people serve you, but how many people you serve. And that in the kingdom, that position of leadership means I'm responsible. I'm responsible. I'm responsible, and as a result of that, that I'm called to lead this. Sometimes people will come up to me about different things in the church, you know, I don't want to say anything to you, but I'm really glad they come and talk to me, because the position I have that God's placed me in, that I have a responsibility, if things aren't going right, to work on them, to make them better, to deal with them, and to try to do it in a way that Jesus would have me do it. And so my position gives me a responsibility to do that. And that with leadership, that the greatest sacrifice should come from those in leadership. The greatest level of commitment, the greatest example in how we serve should come from that. And so there's just something about, as we begin to serve, that God begins to direct our life. He begins to steer our life in the direction we're supposed to go. And sometimes there's slight changes, there's slight movements. I'm amazed how many times in the Bible that God dealt with people and revealed, it was just ministering to people whenever they were just doing this very common thing. I think about Moses, we talked about him, and God appeared to him when he was in a wilderness and just serving his father-in-law's, crops. You think about Joseph, and he got notoriety by how he ministered in the lives of other people, even while in prison. And so with all of those things, serving is so important, because serving leads us to the place that we're called. If you want to discover your purpose, you're not going to do it by sitting on your laurels, resting on your blessed assurance. You're going to do it by being willing to serve and by being available for the things that God has called you to do and being available for the moments that you're needed. In other words, to be a part. And so as that begins to happen, then God begins to show us and reveal us and lead us along paths that we did not even know were there. So number one is serving leads us to the place we're called. Look at number two, if you would. Go with me, if you would, to 2 Kings 3. 2 Kings 3. Now, 2 Kings is in the Old Testament. It's like the 12th book of the Old Testament. Like, it's somewhere around, like, you got 1 and 2 Samuel, then 1 and 2 Kings, and after that is 1 and 2 Chronicles. So 2 Kings chapter 3. We're going to start reading at verse 4. In 2 Kings chapter 3, verse 4, it says this: King Mesha of Moab was a sheep breeder. He used to pay the king of Israel an annual tribute of 100,000 lambs and the wool of 100,000 rams. But after Ahab's death, the king of Moab rebelled against the king of Israel. So King Joram promptly mustered the army of Israel and marched from Samaria. On the way, he sent this message to King Jehoshaphat of Judah. The king of Moab has rebelled against me. Will you join me in battle against him? And Jehoshaphat replied, "Why, of course. You and I are as one. My troops are your troops, and my horses are your horses." Then Jehoshaphat asked, "What route will we take?" "We will attack from the wilderness of Edom," Joram replied. The king of Edom and his troops joined them, and all three armies traveled along a roundabout route through the wilderness for 7 days. But there was no water for the men or their animals. "What should we do?" the king of Israel cried out. "The Lord has brought the three of us here to let the king of Moab defeat us." So the king of Israel said this. He thought the fact that the circumstances weren't what they were supposed to be was an indication that God wasn't for him. And sometimes that's a mistake we make. Sometimes things can be difficult, they can be challenging, and the devil will tell us, "Well, see, God's not in this." But just because things are difficult or hard right now doesn't mean you're not doing what God wants you to do. It doesn't say his path is always easy. It says his path is perfect. So the king of Israel said that. But then the king of Judah, who is Jehoshaphat, said this. King Jehoshaphat of Judah asked, "Is there no prophet of the Lord with us? If there is, we can ask the Lord what to do through him." In other words, Jehoshaphat wasn't looking at the circumstances. He just said, "We need a prophet that hears from God, and he can tell us what God wants us to do, because that's what matters. Not whether things are easy or good, but what God's saying." So he said, "Is there a prophet?" So he's trying to find out who, because he was used to, he'd heard of Elijah, Elijah was a man of God. He was a prophet that God used to speak to the kings, but he wasn't around any longer. And so this is what the answer was. He said, is there no prophet with us? Is there one we can ask the Lord what to do through him? And one of King Joram's officers replied, Elisha, not Elijah, but Elisha, son of Shaphat, is here. He used to be Elijah's personal assistant. Now, when Elijah was a prophet, one of the things that God told him, he said, look, you're going to be taken away and Elisha's going to take your place, so go to him. So he went to Elisha, and Elisha began to follow him and began to serve him. And a matter of fact, one of the things when Elijah told Elisha, he said, look, I'm getting ready to go. And Elisha said, well, I want a double portion of whatever it is that you have. In other words, however God's used you, I want a double portion of that. And so the interesting thing about Elisha's life, when you check out all the miracles that took place in his ministry, and the very last one took place after he died, this is interesting, that some soldier had died, and they put him in the tomb that Elisha was buried in, and when his body touched Elisha's bones, he came back to life. And that miracle right there meant that there were twice as many miracles experienced under Elisha's ministry as there were under Elijah's, and he wanted a double portion. And so it's incredible what took place there. But when you think about where Elisha developed his reputation, that when they were talking about him, they said, isn't there a prophet? And they go, well, there was that one guy that was the personal assistant of Elijah. Now, the New Living says this, the King James is more clear. Do you know what they said? They didn't say personal assistant, which means servant. They said this about him. They said, there's Elisha who washed the hands of Elijah. That's not like the most glorious job in the world. Like if you went to the personnel and they said, well, we got this one job. What is it? Well, you get to wash people's hands wherever you are. I don't know, I was kind of thinking really like, you know, management. You know, I mean, and they're like, you know, like Cousin Eddie, I mean, he's holding up for management. But the thing about it is that, you know, it was one of those things that would not be glorious. And yet in the presence of these kings, the thing that was used to affirm who he was and the calling on his life is what he was willing to do for someone else. Well, there is Elisha. Well, how do we know him? Don't you remember? He's the guy that washed Elijah's hands. That's not very glorious, right? Who's lining up to do that? Let him wash his own hands. Who does he think he is asking me to wash his hands? He's a grown man. He can wash his own hands. But Elisha just showed up to serve. And his serving positioned him for that place of leadership. But also, here's the thing that we need to know, is that we have to, one of the things that God does is that you build your reputation on how you serve. Now, I don't mean just being a good servant, but your willingness to serve. This is what I've noticed about people that aspire greatness, that true greatness comes when, the reason why some people never experience it is because they view themselves as too great to do small things. Servants of God, that there's not anything that's too small for them to be a part of. And as servants that are willing to serve, that we understand this isn't about me. Servants never show up with an agenda or an opinion other than, what do you want me to do? Oh, today I get to wash his hands? Oh, okay. But again, that willingness to do something that other people were unwilling to do may have been one of the very reasons why God chose him. Because in that, he probably realized with the things he'd called Elijah to do, that he needed Elijah to have somebody that would travel with him, encourage him, do these small things sometimes just to be a help, just to take some of the burden off of Elijah's life. But at the same time, it was positioning him for what God had called him to do whenever Elisha was gone. And so it's just such a powerful thing that, you know, that we'll develop our reputation by our willingness to go. When everybody else says, I'm not doing that, and then we step up and go, I'll do it. There's something about that. I've just seen people, you know, that just come through the doors and just, you know, I remember, and I know they met when we first started the church. They came here for just a little bit. And they told me, they said, hey man, you're like, if there's ever a day that, you know, you're not feeling it, you know, if you let me know, I'll just speak for you. And I thought, well, I appreciate that. I said, I've got like people lined up for that role. And they've earned it. You know, I mean, they've served their way there and that kind of thing. So I'm probably going to pick them first. You could usher. Wonder what happened to them. Huh. They're probably ushering someplace else. Anyway, but the truth of the matter is that our willingness to do those things that other people would say, well, that's beneath me. That as a servant of God, that we position ourselves and we'll say, Lord, I'm willing to humble myself under your mighty hand. And you know what? We could, the devil will try to make me think, well, they're not worth that. They're not worthy. But I'm not doing it for them. I'm doing it for you. And so there's something powerful about that mindset, that we develop a reputation by the fact of not just the great things that we do, but the things that we're willing to do because we recognize who we are. It's so wild when you think about Jesus. Man, if you get a chance sometime today, go read John 13. And in the very beginning of John 13, it says this, it's something along these lines. This is an exact quote, but it says that when Jesus realized that the Father had given everything into his power, into his authority, and he recognized why he was here, that you know what he did at that moment when he recognized that this has been given to me? Do you know what he did? He washed their feet. He didn't stand up at the table and make a big pronouncement. Hey, I'm in charge now. I just realized that, that all of this will be delivered into my authority when I rise from the dead. I'll have authority in heaven and earth. And so I need you guys to do all this. No. As he's walking in the call of God, he's God in the flesh, but he laid aside the privileges that come with that. And so things are being revealed to him by the Father. And so knowing that this is what's going to take place, as soon as he did, right there in that, right in that passage, right in that verse, the very next thing he does is he picks the lowest form of servanthood in that household, having the highest position. He chooses the lowest form of servanthood and begins to minister to those that he is Lord over. It's such a powerful thing. It's good for us to not give our flesh its way, to not let pride be the thing that steers our ship. It's healthy for us to be willing to say, hey, I got this, I'll do this. There's something about that that just shapes our heart. I love 1 Peter 5, it says this, humble yourself. In the eyes of people, no, humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. And again, you may be doing this lowly thing, but it's because you've humbled yourself, not under their hand, but under God's hand. And it says, he will lift you up at the right time. Humility is an elevator up. Pride is the thing that destroys the things that we would want to build. Or it keeps us from ever being engaged from those things because we see ourselves as too good, as too deserving, as too any of those things, as opposed to coming up as a servant and going, I don't get to pick. I don't get to pick. This is about what you want from me, Lord. And so Elisha's reputation was built not by all these other miracles that ended up taking place in his ministry. His reputation, the thing that gave him access to those kings, was what he did when he didn't have the title. That he served Elijah, and he was known as the man that washed his hands. And then Jehoshaphat said, bring him here. Let's hear what God has to say through him. And God spoke through him that day. But his reputation was built on what he was willing to do. And so we discover God's purpose for our life whenever that's our mindset, that we build our reputation on how we serve. Let's look at the last thing right here. Go with me, if you would, to Exodus chapter 33. And Exodus is in the Old Testament. It's the second book of the Old Testament. This chapter right here, man, it's just so rich. Moses is talking to God. God's revealing to him different things about his presence and his purpose. And again, understand this, that in the kingdom of God, again and again and again and again, I'll say this because I need to hear it, that position in the kingdom is not for privilege. Position in the kingdom is for purpose, to fill out the purpose of God and what he's called us to do. And so Exodus chapter 33, verse 8, it says this, whenever Moses went out to the tent of meeting, all the people would get up and stand at the entrances of their own tents. So there was this big tent. It was called the tent of meeting. And in it, that there'd be times that they would go meet there and different things would take places where they would meet and God's presence would show up. Well, some days Moses, before the presence of God ever showed up there, he would just go into that tent and the people would watch him. And the minute that he went into the tent and God's presence showed up, then they would kneel at their gates. In other words, Moses was being, he wasn't being a thermometer, just kind of responding to the environment. He was a thermostat, and he went into the presence of God, and then his presence there with an expectation to do God's presence there. He didn't wait on it to take place. He pursued it. And so he says this right here. He goes, they would all watch Moses until he disappeared inside. And as he went into the tent, the pillar of cloud would come down and hover at its entrance while the Lord spoke with Moses. When the people saw the cloud standing at the entrance of the tent, they would stand and bow down in front of their own tents. Inside the tent of meeting, the Lord would speak to Moses face to face, as one speaks to a friend. Afterward, Moses would return to the camp, but the young man who assisted him, Joshua, everybody say Joshua. Joshua, son of Nun, would remain behind in the tent of meeting. So it says, afterward, Moses would return to the camp, but the young man who assisted him is what the New Living says. What would be another word for the young man who assisted him? Yeah, you know, the young man that served him. He was a guy that served Moses for decades. For decades, he served him. For decades, he was there whenever Moses was praying and Moses was seeking God, and the Ten Commandments were given and all those things were taking place, that he was there while all of that happened. And so, you know, it wasn't a very glorious thing, and probably a lot of times, you know, people probably be like, you know, there's Joshua, man, just hanging out with Moses again, not really doing anything of his own, doesn't really have a life of his own, he's just serving. And but then later on when Moses died, in Joshua chapter 1, it says this, God said, Moses, my servant, is dead. Therefore, the time has come for you to lead these people, the Israelites, across the Jordan River into the land I'm giving them. I don't know if Joshua always understood this. I'm sure at some point he probably began to realize it, but I don't know when. But I'm sure there were other people that didn't understand it either, and that is that that time of servanthood was not just servanthood. That time of servanthood was preparation. That God was having him serve Moses, not just to help Moses, but so that he could see how Moses did things, so he could discover that. Because there's gonna come a time when Moses' race was finished, and God wanted to make sure that he could entrust the leadership of his people with somebody that had seen how it took place. And a matter of fact, can you imagine being Joshua, having to replace Moses? Man, you know, you think about that, it's like, oh man, I gotta replace the guy that delivered him from Egypt. And even him, they were mad at it sometimes. Who am I? And then, but God said to him, he goes, look, man, don't be afraid and don't be discouraged. Just like I was with Moses, I'll be with you. In other words, the key to what Moses did was the fact that I was with him and I'll be with you as well. And you know what? He had a history of that because he hung out with Moses and served him when nobody else was around. And the only thing that mattered more to him than being in Moses' presence was being in God's presence, because whenever Moses left that day, it says that Joshua dwelt there, and in my word, he lingered longer in God's presence. And so this is what I know about serving, is this, is that know that serving is your place of preparation. I mean, if you've got big dreams in your heart, then part of it is to serve in areas and serve in places, and not just the church, but the church is one of them, but in other areas. In other things, man, serving other people's dreams and other people's stuff. It's such a great place of preparation. Here's a few reasons why. One is because we'll be asked to do things that our flesh won't want to do. Well, why do I have to do that? Why can't they do it? But instead to have the mindset of, it's not about me, because I'm a servant. And they're not my servant. Just like me, man, they're called, they have a master that they're accountable to, and it's not me. And so we do, we endeavor to serve God. But here's the other thing, is once you begin to serve, then that dream that you have, it, all of a sudden, man, it begins to be very real. That thing that you feel like you're called to do, what that thing that stirs you up, as it's there in your heart, you know, and you begin to think about it, then the tough thing about it is that because you know, all of a sudden now you begin to be stirred up, and all of a sudden now you want to be there now. I want to do this now. And then we have to be taught to trust God and to wait, not just on his direction, but his timing. You know, I've told my own kids, the worst thing that can happen, worse than not getting the job you want, is getting the job you want before you're ready. And so it's what God has called us to do, that he wants to prepare us for what he's called us to do. And so it's the place that God prepares us, is in that place of serving. Our flesh rebels against it. Even as I talk about it, I know there are people that have, you know, on both services that will hear me, and their flesh is rebelling against this thought, giving them all sorts of reasons as why they don't need to do that. Causing people to, you know, question motives and all that. But instead of just saying, Lord, I just want to do what you want me to do. I want to serve like Jesus has called me to serve and not make it about me, but what you want. And so I know in my own life that this is what God would do, is that he positioned me because I was available. I remember when I was applying for a youth minister job in Clovis, New Mexico. And I've said this to you before, and it's not false humility. It really was how I saw myself, and it was probably accurate. And that is, I didn't view myself as very gifted. The only thing I knew I had going for me is I was going to show up, and it was going to be hard to run me off. And I knew that about me. Those are probably the only two things I really had going for me. But I didn't feel like I was really gifted in any other areas. And I remember I was applying for this job in New Mexico, and there were 9 other people that were applying for it. So there were 10 of us applying. And I knew, kind of had an idea of what some of them could do. They had more experience than I did. They were more gifted than me. And I'm like, why would you pick me? But I thought, okay, well, I'll go through the interview process and I'll do it. And the wild thing about it was taking place at a ministry that I'd worked for 6 years. And I remember the guy that led the ministry, he went down and told the guy that was hiring. He said, look, he said, you don't need to interview anybody else. He said, this guy worked for us. I know him. He's faithful. He's loyal. He'll show up. He'll do what you want him to do. And he'll just, you know, you won't have to ever worry about him or anything like that. He'll serve. I didn't say that, he did. And I will tell you, I don't want to feel like I'm bragging on myself, because I've got plenty of failures in my story as well. But this was just one of those days that moment, just being willing to be there, paid off. And so I want to encourage you. It can be so discouraging, because things hardly ever happen on the timetable that we want. They hardly ever happen as quickly as we want. As we begin to, all of a sudden, as we begin to do this, we give our lives to Jesus, and all of a sudden this awakening takes place in us. As God begins to reveal to us things that he wants us to do, and we begin to surrender control of areas in our life, and then all of a sudden we start serving just here and there, and may not even be fully sure. We just know there's a need, and it's like, that fits my timetable. I can do that and not impact my job, and I begin to serve. And then we begin to be stirred up and begin to realize what God's called us to do. But in there, he's training us of all the things that he wants us to do. He's training us to be willing. He's training us to walk in humility and in obedience and purpose. And this is the classroom that he teaches us in. You know, I'll close with this. You know, one of the reasons why we're relentlessly good to our community is because I want us to earn the right to tell people about Jesus. I don't want to just show up and presume, hey, you need to listen to us. I want us to be good to people. And so it's just one of those things, and we're going to be that. I shared this story this past weekend at a conference I went to. But, you know, I'm going to tell you, and I'll make this quick, because this story, when I tell you what I'm going to tell you about, you're going to be like, oh, this, I'm really going to look forward to this. No, you'll probably think, this guy's just ran out of stuff to talk about. But I'm going to tell you about the day that I began to like scrambled eggs. So I'm going to tell you that. So are you ready? So hang in here with me. I did not always like scrambled eggs. I didn't like the way they, you know, whenever I would taste them, I'm like, that just feels weird in my mouth. No, thank you. And I remember I was a senior in high school, and I remember, I think it was First Baptist was doing a prayer breakfast for us. And so I went over there that morning. It was game day, and I was hungry. And they had a guy named John Roush, who was an All-American guard at the University of Oklahoma. He stood up, and they had him there, and he shared his testimony. It was very compelling. And I'm really hungry. I'm like, I wonder what they're serving. Maybe it'll be pancakes. Maybe it'll be bacon, all those American meals. And they brought out scrambled eggs that had sausage cooked in them. And my mind went, you know, you don't like that. And I thought, hey, I'm really hungry. I'm going to try them. So I thought, maybe my taste buds have changed. And so I took a bite of them. I'm like, I'm either really hungry or these are really good now. And so that day, I began to like scrambled eggs. You're like, what does that have to do with our message? Well, here's what it has to do with it, and that is that I was not the fastest guy on the team. I wasn't the biggest guy on the team. Now, I was a guy that showed up, and because of that, I got to start. But I will tell you that I wasn't the guy that anybody really noticed. There's just something about my life that often I get in settings, and I feel invisible. And maybe you feel that way, too, and we'll talk more about that next week. But I just remember that, you know, just being there that day and how I'd have moments like that. And they didn't know me. And when I graduated, I didn't have any kind of career that they would follow. And that wasn't because they were bad or anything like that. I was just there. But they were good to me. And that wasn't the only time that they were good to me, them and a few other churches. And they have no idea how those moments shaped my life. I remember doing youth ministry, and I knew that my season to do that was coming to an end. And I knew that God was calling me now to enter into pastoring. And I didn't, you know, I was looking at other opportunities and checking out some things, but I told the Lord, I'm like, if I could do anything, I would go back to the place I grew up, and I would do for people what was done for me because of the impact it had on my life. And that day that I liked scrambled eggs was just a picture of those moments that they may not have had an understanding or how significant those moments were to me. I'm not even sure I did at the time, but it shaped me. That's why we're good to people. That's why we're doing the Legacy Project, is we want to impact kids, because we don't want our best days to be right now or yesterday. We want to be ahead of us so we can impact kids' stories and serve them. We're going to serve kids? Absolutely. You better believe it, because God has called them to great things. And so that's what we're going to do. So that when we serve, man, it's our place of preparation. I want you to bow your heads and close your eyes for just a minute. I just really, you know, we do this sometimes so you can pray for people or pray for yourself. I really want this to be a moment of surrender. If there's anything in your life that you just kind of look at and, you know, you're like, you know, you kind of have the mindset of mine, or if there's any area in your life that, again, that, you know, that if there's any place in our world that maybe we look at and go, I'm too good for that. I'm too good to do that. Greatness in the kingdom is not seeing things that are too small to do. Greatness in the kingdom is being willing to do anything, no matter how small it is. And so just spend a moment with God, and in any area that you have to, that pride has to be let go of, that surrender has to take place. Let's just spend a moment with God.